this week's edition of the Video News InScreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from InScreen Media joins me from London this week. Hey, Colin.
I am indeed in not so sunny London. I came here for the Connected TV conference, which was absolutely great. Really enjoyed it, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in an upcoming podcast, but not today, because we have a very special guest, don't we?
We do. We have Bruce Leishman with us, who is the president of Leishman Research Group, which is really one of the gold standards of measurement and research in the pay TV and broadband industries. And Bruce is a former colleague of mine from my cable TV days, so very happy to have him join us today to talk about Q1 2017 a pay TV video and broadband subscriber trends. So, hey, Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing well, and thanks for the gold standard compliment.
Absolutely. So, Bruce, let's start off at a high level. Give us your broad overview of Q1 17 pay TV video subscriber performance. It was a pretty surprising quarter for a very particular reason, right?
Sure. So what I do is I look at the industry on a quarterly basis. And what I do is I track the top providers because they represent 95% of the industry. When we look at the top provider performance, we see that the industry lost 410,000 subscribers in the first quarter of 2017. And that includes the internet delivered subscribers. You have to include them. So that 410,000 losses, that's compared to a 10,000 gain in the first quarter of 2016. And the other interesting part of the numbers is this is the first time that the industry has ever lost subscribers in a first quarter.
What's going on? If Q1 is usually such a great quarter for the industry, why is it not this time?
Well, I think when people look at the industry and they think it's all about consumer demand and the behavior of consumers, but the reality is the dynamics of the industry are both about the behavior of consumers, but also about the providers and how aggressively they seek new customers. And one of the reasons why the first quarter was always the best quarter of the year was that is the quarter that providers were most aggressive in trying to get new subscribers, knowing that if you get subscribers in the first quarter, you'll be better at making your year-end numbers, but also knowing that the second quarter is traditionally a down quarter because of college moves and snowbirds and what have you. So when we look at these dynamics, we have to understand that it's a combination of providers and consumers, and I would say more providers than consumers.
So, Colin, Bruce, you're sort of upending a little bit the narrative that the media has run with around these Q1 numbers as they've been trickling out over the past couple of weeks. And that narrative, of course, is all about cord cutting. It's all about the consumer side. You're saying the opposite of that. You're saying that actually more of the Q1 loss has to do with the providers not pursuing, kind of putting strong, aggressive market offers out there than about the consumers cutting back. Can you just dig into that a little bit more for us?
Sure, absolutely. I think the whole dynamics of this industry are much more nuanced than people make it out to be. And that's not only true today, but it's been true for a decade. That, you know, it's the idea that cord cutting, and we always see this scissors cutting a cable cord. First of all, cable is only about half of the pay TV industry. But second of all, it's not, when you look at the dynamics of any subscription business, it is both a function of those who are going out the bottom of the funnel. If we picture the industry as a funnel, it's a function of both those who are going out the bottom of the funnel, but also those who are going in to the top of the funnel to make up for those who are running out the bottom. And so what we've always seen in the first quarter is a good quarter because the providers are aggressively putting subscribers into the top of the funnel. What we're seeing now, especially for the non-cable providers, is a little less aggressiveness there. So maybe the numbers aren't as important to them on the sub counts. And you know, even in Dish's reporting, they talk about, as the pay TV industry is mature, our strategy has included an increased emphasis on acquiring and retaining high-quality subscribers, even if it means that we will acquire and retain fewer overall subscribers. And I think that's one of the keys, is they're becoming more disciplined. As sub count in amongst itself is not as important, particularly for the non-cable subscribers, they're becoming more disciplined in who they're going after. And some of the consumers who used to be going into the top of the funnel may be falling on the sidelines at this point. So we have to view it as this dynamic of both those who are exiting and those who are entering.
So that's a pretty interesting trend. I wonder if that means that the operators are sort of happy maybe for the lower value customers to go to an online solution if they can continue to cherry pick the higher paying ones.
Well, absolutely. So I include the online solutions in my numbers, but keep in mind Sling TV and DirecTV Now would be the two biggest, with Vue, but Vue doesn't publish their numbers. So if you look at Sling and DirecTV Now, they've got about 1.7 million subscribers at this point combined. Keep in mind, who owns those companies? Well, Sling is owned by Dish, and DirecTV Now is owned by AT&T DirecTV. So it's part of their arsenal. One of the challenges is how much it costs to acquire a subscriber, particularly for satellite. So satellite costs $850 to $950 to acquire a subscriber. So are they going to as aggressively go after a dubiously valued subscriber at a $900 cost, or are they going to go at one with a much lower, you know, one-tenth the acquisition cost to get an internet-delivered subscriber? So even when we compare the first quarter of 2017 to the first quarter of 2016, if we just look at satellite gained 175,000 in the first quarter of 2016. In the first quarter of 2017, they lost nearly 320,000. So just in those two services, Dish and DirecTV, we see a difference of nearly 500,000 subscribers from last year's first quarter to this year's first quarter. Obviously, some of that is being given to their internet-delivered services, which come at a much lower acquisition cost.
So, Bruce, let's just see if we can explore a little bit more the difference between sort of the top of the funnel and the bottom of the funnel, as you put it, because, you know, clearly there is this big cord-cutting narrative out there, and you're sort of debunking that a little bit here. Is there a way that you have for breaking down how much of the loss was due to the less aggressive promotional tactics versus, which again, top of the funnel activity versus the pure cord cutting, the bottom of the funnel activity? Are you able to break that down in any way, that 400,000 loss?
Sure. I can't see it on a quarterly basis. I can see it on an annual basis. And one of the things that's interesting is the rate of exit that I see in my survey in 2016 was about 2.5%. The rate of exit that I had in the same survey a decade earlier was 2%. So this exit rate really hasn't changed that much. There's a little bit of an increase in it, but not a significant increase. And that's a decade ago. We didn't call them cord cutters a decade ago. We called them non-subs. And I think this is the problem. Cord cutting is not a fallacy completely, but it also leads to bad analysis. If we think that everyone who is a non-subscriber is a cutter, a cord cutter, that's really not the nuance of the industry. That we've always, a decade ago, you know, you mentioned at the top, Will, we worked in the industry over two decades ago. There were always people going in and out of the market. One of the big differences today is that when people go out of the market, they have a much greater ability to cobble together a viewing experience, both with SVOD, but also with broadcast. I mean, when I look at my consumer data, close to 60% of people who get an SVOD service also have a broadcast antenna. So what they're really doing is cobbling together a viewing experience. But back to the specifics of the question, we're not seeing a significant acceleration in those going out the bottom of the funnel. What we're seeing is, from a decade ago, we saw 1% of people who were new to the industry entering or re-entering the industry in our 2016 study. In our 2006 study, we saw 3.5% who were entering or re-entering the category. And again, that is both a function of consumers and the alternatives they have, but also a function of providers saying, is it worth my while to as aggressively seek subscribers as I did in the past? Now, again, I do want to emphasize that is different for the cable segment, most of the cable segment of the pay TV industry, than it is in some cases for the non-cable segment.
So I'm wondering, Comcast is probably the only operator that's bucking the trend. It's continuing to grow. It did grow in the first quarter. And I'm wondering if maybe this is a function of Comcast business model with the X1, which is not a very cheap service, and perhaps they've been targeting the more expensive, more high spending consumers in the first place. Could this be why they're continuing to grow while others are shrinking?
Well, you know, I think you have to look at it. It's important to look at it on an individual basis. And when you look at Comcast in 2016, they grew video subscribers. And in fact, for the whole cable industry, the cable industry had a better year in 2016 since any year since 2006. So their losses were fewer than in any year since 2006. So again, we have to parse the pay TV industry from cable, satellite, telco, who telco is losing a lot of subscribers, in many ways by choice, and internet delivered. So addressing the specific question about X1, what X1 is at its core is a retention device. It is glue, and because it's trying to create a scenario where if I leave Comcast, I'm going to lose something. I'm going to lose that relationship that X1 brings, integration with Netflix and what have you. So it is a retention device, and I think in this industry, which is saturated and in slow decline, retention becomes more and more important, and that can be X1, or that can be bundling, or it can be some other device, but it has to be more than just price.
So, Bruce, I think we want to talk a little more about Comcast, but one other question is, you know, there are other industry analysts that are putting together the Q1 numbers as well that were somewhat different than yours. I wonder if there's any qualification on your numbers that you need to add so that listeners understand them a little better.
Sure. Thanks, Will. I think, you know, we all do it in a similar way, that these are the reported numbers from the industry. All of us are tracking about the top group, which is about 95%. What I do is separate out the cable and separate out the satellite, separate out the telco. But I also include the internet delivered. I include Sling and an estimate for DirecTV Now because they didn't report. In my mind, you have to, because not including the internet delivered services is like not including satellite in 1994 or not including telcos in 2006. They are just another form of delivery, so we shouldn't treat them any differently than we treat any other form of pay TV.
Okay, cool. Thanks for the clarification. And maybe now's a good time to sort of switch horses and let's look at the other big service that many of the cable operators provide, and that's broadband. So you also released new broadband sub numbers with the video subs. So can you take us through those numbers?
Sure. I think the key headline here is with 93.9 million subscribers for the top providers, there are now more broadband subscribers in America than there are pay TV subscribers. So the industry added close to a million subscribers in the first quarter, and now the total is greater than pay TV overall.
So is that to say, Bruce, that for the big providers, broadband is now in a more important business than video, given the two trends, the uptrend and the downtrend that we've been talking about here?
Well, it depends who you are. I mean, I think, you know, there are some small cable providers who made that decision years ago. So if you look at somebody like Cable One, they made the decision a few years ago that they were going to emphasize higher margin broadband service and de-emphasize pay TV because it's a lower margin. So that is a strategy that cable company chose. The two largest cable companies, Comcast and Charter, have somewhat of a different strategy, which is still much more about the bundle and not looking at the industry as what is my margin on broadband and what is my bill. I think they view it more in the kind of holistic margin and what does that give me. Certainly, there is an increase in non-video customers throughout the industry. But, you know, ultimately, while broadband is the higher margin service, I think for the largest companies, they want both. And they want both, not just for revenue purposes, but as I said before, really to add retention and to add glue to the services. But there are some consumers, particularly younger ones, who might just want a broadband-only service. And they will have that offering if they'd like it.
It seems like there's some sort of alignment going on here because with the tremendous growth in broadband subs, one of the other things that you also track, we're also seeing tremendous growth in, and that's with connected TVs. And it seems like all of this stuff is connected. So talk to us a little bit about connected TVs and that dynamic.
Sure. I think they are related, but I'll take a half step back, Colin, and first say, when we look at the growth of broadband, it is not at the expense of pay TV. I think that's too often seen as the broadband growth is at the expense of pay TV. They are two different industries, and broadband is internet at home, and that's where the service is going. But you're absolutely right that what broadband allows is other functionality, and one of those things that we've seen is the increase in connected TVs. And we had a study that came out a couple weeks ago that showed that connected households have 69% of households have at least one connected TV device. And that's not just a smart TV. That means they actually have it connected or a connected Blu-ray TV, Blu-ray device. So 69% have at least one. That's up from 24% in 2010. So obviously that broadband pipe changes the dynamics and changes the possibilities of what is out there. So we see this significant increase, not only in the devices in the house, but also the people using them.
And so, the natural next question is, how does that affect the incumbent pay TV services? It's obviously that, the case that if you've got your big screen TV connected now to the internet and you're able to watch Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or whatever, that there's only X number of hours in a day. So if you're starting to shift your viewership over to those different SVOD services, does that accelerate that maybe they don't need PTV anymore and therefore increase cord cutting?
Sure. Hypothetically, hypothetically that can happen. I mean, when we look at the data, about 80% of people who watch Netflix watch it on the TV. So what it means is there's very little difference between Netflix and any that's out there. So the question is really where's the value? And what those dynamics are different based on the household. And what we see is that households that have three television sets, and that's about half of all households, 90% of them subscribe to a pay TV service. So having the connected TV is just adding value to them. For households with just one TV set, two-thirds subscribe. So about one-third do not subscribe to a pay TV service. So I think the dynamics are not just about having a connected TV, but, the depth in the house. And I think when we look at pay TV and even broadband, that decision is made on a household level. And the more people in the household, the more TVs in the household, the more likely to still get a pay TV service. Viewership is done much more so on an individual level, and that's where the dynamics are different.
So we're running out of time here, and I want to get your thoughts on the rest of 2017, Bruce. So what are you expecting to see in pay TV for the rest of 2017, and maybe speculate a little bit about the continued growth in broadband.
And skinny bundles.
Oh, and skinny bundles.
Sure. let's see. And in the last minute, yeah. we are in a new normal now, and how that new normal will look, I hate to say, is somewhat uncertain. 2Q is normally the deepest down quarter because that is the move quarter. Now we know that Charter has done some things that's going to alleviate some of the move churn that they've had in the past. In some of their areas and where they're snowbirds. So maybe we'll see not as dramatic a decline as we saw in the first quarter. But we're in a little bit of an unknown, and we're in a little bit of an unknown because of both consumers and providers. And what are their challenges from the provider side? What are their dynamics? Which way do they want to go? And that's something that we'll have to see. I think, when we look at the industry, we look at the number one pay TV company is not a cable company. It is AT&T. They are the number one pay TV company. And when and if they acquire the Turner properties, the Time Warner business, I believe that they will have a greater incentive to continue to add subscribers, that they will be more incented to keep the industry healthy than they may be today. So that's one of the dynamics that will change over time. Clearly, they have a skinny bundle offering at AT&T, which they're emphasizing. You see it all over their advertising. Skinny bundle is part of the environment. We have five different players who are now playing in that zone, and it's a challenging zone because low price equals low margin equals high churn. So that one will be an interesting one to watch. But I think as we're going forward, we have to understand that the dynamics that impact the market are both the function of consumers and providers.
Just to follow up on the skinny bundles, Bruce, one of the, to me, most intriguing questions about skinny bundles is who is their target audience? Is it people who have already dropped out of the pay TV ecosystem or arguably never were a part of it, and these skinny bundles are trying to bring them back in? Or are they actually pulling existing pay TV subscribers down to the skinny bundle level, people who may want to save money, don't think they need as many channels, et cetera? What's your take on who skinny bundles are attracting?
Sure. If we think, we're juxtaposing skinny bundle for internet delivered. Okay. So the internet delivered services obviously play better with fewer TVs in the household, as does a skinnier package, because the fewer TVs, the fewer people who are making a decision on what they're viewing, the less likely that something is going to be missing. That's one of the challenges of the skinny bundle, is something is going to be missing. And 75% of people in our survey say that there is something that is a must-have. So when I think when you look at who is best for this, it would be a one-person, one-TV household, more likely younger, more economically focused. And I think that's the market that they're more looking at. Again, remember that the two biggest companies in this are satellite companies. So they're not trying to steal subscribers from their satellite business. They're trying to enter more of a new segment, more of an urban segment that they can't get at with their satellite. More for AT&T, more about the mobility aspect of it. So I think that's what they're more looking at. Because this is not, the internet delivered are not for the 55 plus individuals who represent one third of all American adults. So I think we really have to view it as a segmentation, and this segmentation is much more about the singles, the urbans, the much more cost conscious. But when you go at them, obviously you're talking about individuals who are much higher churn.
Right. That's a great insight, Bruce. And I think we're just about out of time, though, but this has been a great discussion.
Likewise.
Happy to be part of it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce, for joining us. And Colin, good conversation. Safe travels back from London.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. We'll see you all again next week.